All right, Red Wings fans, we're back for another playoff edition of the Obstructed View. I am Chris Hollis from Motown Wings, sitting in the captain's chair here for this episode, where we are going to talk a little bit about the playoffs as they continue on. The Red Wings and the Sharks battling it out right now, and we got an awesome crew with us tonight. First and foremost, the captain of the Tin Hat Brigade, George Malik from over at Snapshots. George, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. I'm resting and folding tinfoil right.
That's
now.
Right. That's right. The flash mob for game three. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But you've been taking a little heat today from the Twitter community, from the blogging community about the post game there yesterday. But we are definitely going to cover off on that in this show. We've also got from our last stop for the Red Wings out there in Phoenix, we've got Jess from Bingo Bango. Jess, how you doing?
I'm better right now. I'm a little better today.
Yeah, you're doing okay.
I'm doing all right.
Now we were talking before the show. The horoscopes are no longer in play here. We're just going with it.
We're just going with it. After the last one, I kind of knew secretly that the horoscopes weren't giving us anything good. So we're moving
on.
The stars turned against us.
The stars did turn against us, but you know, we did get them to align a little bit tonight because our third guest is he needs no introduction. From over at the production line, it's Michael Petrella. Petrella, what's up, bud?
How you doing, guys?
We are doing okay. Are you doing okay? How are you holding up?
It's hot. It's very hot here. All of a sudden, it's like 85 the last few days. Then we don't have air conditioning yet, so it's a monster of a week.
A little warm in the NYC right now, it sounds like. So.
Indeed, and it's always hot in New York, and then you add the lack of air conditioning, and it's a disaster.
Yes, I hear you. I hear you. Speaking of hot, guys, we sit right now. We are two games into the Western Conference semifinals, and maybe the Wings getting a little hot under the collar right now with trying to get it back together. Obviously, down two games to none. The last time we talked to you, we were four games into the quarterfinals. The Wings obviously getting it done against the Phoenix Coyotes in a seventh game out in Phoenix. And then two games right off the bat in San Jose, both going the Sharks' way by a score of 4-3. Joe Pavelski been a monster. You know, George, I'm going to start with you. We got through the Phoenix series. We had the crucial Game 7 where we had to go back out to their place after squandering Game 6 in Detroit. And then we have the quick turnaround thanks to Don Henley and the Eagles, who I will never, ever buy another album from again, that forced the Wings to play pretty much two days after they get done with the Phoenix series. And then they get a two-day break and they come back against San Jose on Sunday and lose. But you know, we've talked about all kinds of things influencing the way they're playing and dictating what's going on. But what's the biggest thing right now that you're noticing about this team that's either giving you cause for concern, maybe keeping you optimistic? I don't know. What do you feel about this team right now, George?
I'm especially given that I'm paying money to go down to the game and wear my tinfoil hat tomorrow. I'm very concerned about the fact that all of the little errors that the Red Wings corrected against the Phoenix Coyotes, their willingness to let the Coyotes charge in over the blue line, those surprising seams in the defensive coverage where the Coyotes could just kind of walk in on the net, when the Coyotes' ability to kind of cycle the puck out down low and when the Red Wings would start chasing players, they'd find somebody in front, and their ability to really muck up the neutral zone and stifle the Wings' transition game. You know, it appeared in Game 7 that the Red Wings had definitively figured out how to play, how to manage and defeat a team that is both trying to out-Red Wing the Red Wings in terms of puck possession and is still playing that Anaheim Ducks, San Jose Sharks, north-south physical hockey game. Let's trap, dump the puck in, grind them out, and be opportunistic. I thought that the Red Wings had finally kicked it up to really, I guess you could say, fifth or sixth gear in terms of intensity, in terms of effort, and especially in terms of attention to detail. I thought they had been lazy at times in the first round. I don't mean lazy in the sense of, I mean mentally lazy, because they were just not buying into doing the hard and sometimes physically painful work that is involved in winning playoff games. And, you know, by game seven, I was pretty dang confident. You know, this is the Wings. They're going to be just fine. You know, bring on the Sharks. Game one happens. The first 10 minutes, it looks like the Wings still think they're playing the Phoenix Coyotes, and then the margin for error is just the same. They cough up three goals, and they come back, but they never seemed to be able to, you know, stifle the Sharks' attack, to get to plain old stand up at the blue line, get body position on the Sharks' players so that you're steering them to the outside, get your sticks in your bodies in shooting and passing lanes, support each other, win the one-on-one battles for the puck, obviously win face-offs, move the puck up the ice fast in the neutral zone, and just establish your forecheck and grind it out in their zone, and more than anything, just not stand around and look confused when the other team gets the jump on you. At least hustle back and try to make something of it. I think that the too many times this series, regardless of what you can say about the refereeing, or regardless of whether you think Jimmy Howard has been really solid and overworked, or whether maybe he needed game one to dial up his performance as well, there's been a lot of Red Wings standing around while the Sharks are putting pucks into empty nets, and I think that's a huge concern. And I don't know whether that speaks to their competition level, or whether they're just plain old, whether they have hit the wall, their post-Olympic push has tired them out too much and this is as good as they can be, or whether they have yet another level of hockey and another level of mental and physical commitment to the game to show up.
George, I don't know that. I think you've definitely put some time into this one and thinking about it, man.
No, that was off the top
there
of my head.
There you go. But I think you hit on a ton of great points, and I think one of the things that we've seen, and I know I'm guilty of it, and Jess, let me steer to you on this, is that I'm doing the same thing George is doing. I'm looking back at all of the progress that the Wings made in that Phoenix series, and it felt like Game 7 was the, you know, it was like, all right, we're engaged, we're ready to go now, and we put it together and we get it done. But I think you went to a couple of the games when Detroit was out there in Phoenix, and, you know, you got to see them firsthand, and when you watch them now, in the first two games of the San Jose series, are you seeing the same team that you saw in Phoenix, or what's going on? Do you see where are they making the same mistakes in your mind, or is it something else?
Well, I mean, in Phoenix, I guess it was more that they couldn't put a consistent effort together, where kind of with the San Jose series, you kind of see them floating around at that same level, that same intensity throughout the whole 60 minutes. But then again, I'm really still not actually that concerned. If you look at it, they only lost by one goal both times. And that game-winning goal wasn't a 5-on-3. And even if you want to bitch about the officiating or you don't, that still is a 5-on-3 goal. The Wings need to capitalize on the power plays that they have and the opportunities that they have. But if they can kick it up, if they can get that intensity and fix the small things, fix their face-offs, fix the defensive coverage, just like they did at the end of the Phoenix series, I'm really not that concerned. I mean, San Jose should have beat them by a lot more than what they did in those first two games.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you touch on a great point, and Petrella, I'm going to tee this one up for you. What's going on in the faceoff circle, man? Like, it's a nightmare right now. Pavelski goes 13 of 16 on Sunday against the Wings, and it was just a one-man wrecking crew, and we're going to talk about him too, but the faceoffs is something that we've heard since the Phoenix series, and it's just not getting better. Where does responsibility lie here?
I wish I could answer that, but, you know, it clearly it lies with the centermen, I suppose. Like, they've never been that bad at this until very recently, like you said. So I don't have an answer for you what's struggling there. I just think they're getting overworked in the dot, maybe. I can't answer it. I know Abdelkader's always had trouble with it, but he's clearly not the one to blame for losing 60% of the draws. Mm-hmm. From, you know, the start of the game to the finish. So, I don't know, man. Something happened. Drapes isn't winning like he used to, and Pavel Datsyuk's got to win a couple more. Him and Zetterberg both, even though they don't always take the draws anymore, but, you know, they always had a way of just kind of winning one way or another, either getting their feet in there and just, I don't know, something. Something's got to change, and they're certainly not looking like the Wings of old in the draw.
Right, and George, let me pose this one to you. You know, we hear time and time again, whether it's from Ken Daniels or Ken Cal or Daryl, you know, Razor Ray or whoever you want to talk about. The Wings are a puck possession team. This is what they base their game around. And if you're not going to win faceoffs and get that puck possession, what do they have to do, George? What is it going to take to alter the game to the point that they can keep, you know, finally get over that hump and get that win if they're not going to be successful on the faceoff dot?
Well, first and foremost, I think Paul McLean made a very underrated comment that was noted. I think it was yesterday during the game two. He said that the Sharks forwards were doing a better job of cheating on the draws, and not meaning cheating illegally. Cheating in faceoffs is considered a good thing when you can get away with it, meaning that not only were the Sharks centers getting their sticks down, but that the wingers were getting a jump on the Red Wings. Mm-hmm. That in the draws that weren't plainly, cleanly won, one way or another, the Sharks are out competing the Red Wings forwards to get to the puck and to muck it back to the defense. Or in some cases, I think what the Sharks do that the Coyotes didn't is they are more than willing to muck it forward, push it into the corner, and know believe that they can get to that puck, that loose puck, and retrieve it and put it in the, you know, and try and find a way to put it towards the slot. And the Red Wings always want to move backward, always want to put it to the point, always want to get it to Lidstrom or Rafalski for a shot. And I think that sometimes it might be better for them to get the winger in and try and muck it along to the sideboards and just sort of win it in a scrum, as opposed to trying to win clean draws and get beat and get the puck shot down the ice when you're in the offensive zone or you know, end up losing a couple of puck battles and finding the puck in the back of your net in your own zone.
Yeah, totally, totally. It's been a struggle.
It's winger support, and I think that winger support, harder skating, better positioning, and just desire of out competing, out gritting, and being willing to simplify your game and sometimes muck it up. I think that speaks to both the Wings, you know, the face-off issues, as well as I guess a lot of the issues that plague the Wings.
Sure.
But long story short, muck it up. Screw firing it back to the defenseman.
There you go.
Muck it up. Get the puck.
We want a muck. George wants some muck. He wants some grind. He wants the get physical down there. And George, I agree with you. I think too, you know, we saw in game one, Cronwall got nailed for an obstruction interference penalty off of a faceoff because the Sharks got the jump on him. And you know, those are the small things that right now the Wings look like they just need to step up. They're playing, from the two games that I've seen, it looks like they're controlling a lot of the play. They're not playing bad. They're finding themselves at the disadvantage and you know, we commented on it today, on at least I did, is that even if we're going to have the bad calls, and this is a good segue into the officiating subject that I know everybody's very excited about, you know, even if you're going to have those calls, you have to evolve your game somehow. You have to get through it. It's, you know, they can only hold you back so much, and the championship team is going to evolve and make it happen. So the Wings are going to have to figure a way out. You know, the versus guys, they like to say that the Wings are the best adapting team in the league. We will definitely see that this week, you know, two big games as we come back to the Joe. But, you know, Petrella, I'm gonna start with you. Obviously the hot topic following game two was the penalty disparity. One was 10-4 in terms of power plays in favor of San Jose in game two. Call quality, questionable at best. A lot, you know, obviously the Bertuzzi hold people were focused on, but you could, you know, there was some calls too that were questionable that went the Sharks' way. I think it was a pretty bad effort across the board, and it, you know, but you look at the noise being made about it today. Obviously, I think Jess touched on it. The game winning goal was a 5-on-3 in game one. It was a 5-on-3 in game two. You know, what are the Wings going to have to do here? I obviously the calls are tough, but Are they that bad, and or, you know, or is it a matter of the Wings just doing what they're doing and hope that things shake out, or are they going to really have to change it up to compensate for a slight in officiating? What do you think?
I think a little of column A and a little of column B. I think enough noise has been made by people not related to the Wings for a change, which is good because they can get in trouble. But I think enough attention has been brought to it that I think that the officiating is going to improve a little bit, mostly because it can't get worse. At the same time, they have to know that every little thing they do is going to be looked at like Todd Bertuzzi was all year. As much as I don't like him, he certainly was on the short end of the stick a handful of times, you know. So I think that if we all realize it watching, they have to realize from the ice, or at least someone behind the bench has to realize. So I think that they're going to have to make a change in whatever it is they're doing if they're going to get nitpicked like that. And these calls, which are, you know, a lot of them were pretty awful, but they're going to have to make some sort of quick adjustment and, you know, play a little further away from the players or whatever it may be. And having said that, the worst call of the night was the final Sharks penalty against Heatley. And I mean, look, almost every penalty you could look at and be like, all right, well, that was kind of a weak call. Some of them had to be made. You know, when you slash at a stick and it breaks, you know, the end. That's a slashing penalty. There's nothing you can say about that. But, you know, the fact that they called that Heatley goaltender interference, I mean, I'm not sure I've ever seen a worse call ever in anything. And it was clearly a makeup call because someone had to have said, dude, it's 10-3 penalty, you know, power plays for one team against the other. There's just, you know, it's not even close to being fair. And I think that call was one of those efforts in which to kind of like make it sort of more fair because there's no way that was called on the merits of the play.
And I can tell you, you know, when I was in college, I refereed, you know, some basketball and did a lot of work with, I actually did work with the Southeastern Conference officials and we worked with the NBA guys. And it's interesting to see the mentality that a professional referee carries. You know, they are proud of what they do, but they're aware. Everybody's aware. And that touches on what you were saying, Petrella, is that, you know, I can remember reffing games where you would look up at a timeout and you would see like, oh my God, like we've called 8 fouls on one team and 1 on the other. So whether or not you still stand by the calls that you made, but you do lodge in the back of your head the fact that, okay, maybe I need to like keep a closer eye on what's going on here. And I don't know if it has to do with the style of play or what's going on, but you know, it's one of those things where it's a factor in the game. It's a real factor, and the Wings have to find a way to overcome. But that said, you know, Jess, we've talked about, obviously the calls are questionable, but, you know, you look at how they want to evolve the game and what you got to do. This is, you know, you and I, and we were all discussing before the game, Brad Watson, obviously, I've had a love affair with you know, B-Rad since last year and the wave off against the Ducks, but doesn't it make sense to you if you have a guy that you know like Watson and who also, you know, we were pointing out before the show was in game 7 of Capitals Habs and waved off a goal. Don't you have to like adjust your game and at least your mindset if you know somebody like that's officiating?
I mean, you would think so. And it was a little disappointing really. And the game was terrible. It was frustrating to watch. It was difficult to watch. I'm sure for both, both sets of fans, they were irritated by certain calls, but the Wings kind of let it go at the end there in the third period, and they did take some, you know, penalties that had to be called, and you saw the frustration coming through with Stewart when he did, you know, punch and hit and pull down Pavelski at the end there in front of Howard. So you have to take that into account. They have to know better. It's not the first time they faced him or kind of been screwed over by him, so they need to adjust their game and play smart and calm down and don't let the emotions get involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the key. Like, you know, you can be physical, but you gotta be smart. And you can go either way on this though. You can be, maybe they are being physical and smart right now and they're just not getting the calls, or maybe they're playing a little recklessly. I tend to lean toward the latter. I think they are playing a little kind of knuckleheaded hockey in some aspects. Obviously the too many men on the ice last night was the killer at the end, puts them on the PK in the last minute there. But, I agree with you, Jess. They gotta smarten up a little bit. But I'm not even gonna set you up, George. I'm just gonna let you go because you have you penned quite the piece after this one, after game 2, the tinfoil hat charge now being fired up by George, the battle cry by George. So George, take it away. What do you got for us on the officiating?
Well, I can't disagree with the concept that the Sharks aren't outworking the Wings and that you know, to some extent, I think I said this, and of course, because I, you know, in any case, it wasn't it. Nobody gave a rat's butt. But yes, the Sharks are outworking and out hustling the Wings, and they're out skating the Wings. And when you get caught standing around a lot of penalties are going to get called against you. But I mean, seriously, there have been several instances where Sharks players near the net, you feel it, they feel a push, and it's like they freaking impale themselves on the post. Devin Setoguchi dives. Devin Setoguchi has gotten rewarded for diving. There have been occasions where Joe Pavelski has dove. I mean, it's the fine line where whether you're a Red Wings fan or whether you're trying to be more objective, you look at these calls and you go, you either go, what the hell are they thinking? Or you say, are they calling what's happening? Or are they calling what they've been told to look for? Or moreover, are they looking to make a penalty call to set a standard? And are they calling something to set a standard as opposed to calling the game that is unfolding before their eyes? I really got the sense, especially in game two, that it was almost like they were anticipating that something was going to be that was illegal enough or marginal enough that they could call it and quote unquote set the standard. You know, the refs that, of course, McClellan praised their integrity and blah, and while Babcock called them out after game one, blah, 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 whatever the hell you want to think about the gamesmanship. I think they were looking to make calls, and I think that the fact that the Sharks outgrinded the Wings, they certainly saw a lot of room for improvement in the Red Wings game, to put it politely, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And the kind of improvement that could be rewarded with stints in the penalty box. It was just, it was staggering. I, you know, it's been a long time since I've ended a game just with my mouth agape in shock. Mm-hmm. I will not deny that the Sharks outplayed the Red Wings. I will not deny that they have earned a lot of their breaks. You know, and I will not deny that the Red Wings are taking the absolutely proper and classy route in saying that, you know, all they can do is worry about themselves. That the rest of this stuff, just they can't worry about it. They obviously need to keep their sticks down, and they need to understand, although they haven't necessarily said this, if they are playing against not only the 18 skaters on the ice, the goalie and the two referees and the two linesmen, that they absolutely cannot allow themselves to give the refs an opportunity to even think they're doing something marginally illegal. But at the same time, it was pathetic, utterly, utterly pathetic, ridiculous, sickening. And to the point that, I mean, you know, you're reading this crap about Sippel and Coughlin or Culpin. Yes. who don't write crap. I should clarify there. About the fact that who's the series supervisor who's saying that everything's great?
Mick Magoo.
Oh, jeez.
You know, I'm sure that Mick Magoo loves the refereeing, you know, and I'm just, it was terrible last night.
And
it was terrible.
George, I think, too.
It was terrible. It was back in the day, Red Wings versus Avalanche. When they fall, it's a call.
Yeah.
You know, it brought back memories of Peter Forsberg. There were times when I was doing the live blog on MLive, and I was like, you know, people started calling them the fish, not the Sharks, the fish, because they were doing a lot of flopping and flailing,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Totally.
And the Sharks, admittedly, you know, they sell the calls well. They don't, you know, when somebody goes down, and Nabokov, oh, he is fantastic at what he does. He is fantastic at what he does. He is a talented man. he certainly brings an element to the game that is entertaining, and I am so surprised that Holmstrom, you know, actually was allowed to stand in front of him and tip in a goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
because certainly when there's a Red Wings, when there's a Red Wing around him, he and Roberto Luongo are definitely tied in terms of theatrics in the postseason. So, no. I don't mean to get this carried away.
It's okay. That's why we wanted you to.
It's a day later, and the Red Wings have to worry about what the Red Wings can do, and frankly, you know, that's my message. But at the same time, I'm a partisan fan here. It doesn't matter that I blog for MLive. It doesn't matter, you know, the fact that people are picking on me and it hurts my feelings. You know, whatever. I don't give a. I give a rat's ass what my fellow fans think,
right.
But I don't give a rat's ass about the criticism, about being told that I'm pathetic and I'm sad, and that Wings fans are whiners, just because, you know, our lovely conspiratorially minded tendencies were rewarded in spades by an utterly and incredibly incompetent. Speaking of disgusting, sickening, pathetic, and just gross, negligent performance by the referees. That's not to say that the Sharks didn't outplay the Red Wings.
Right.
That's not to say that the Red Wings need to play cleaner, smarter hockey, that they need to outcompete the Sharks, that they need to outwork them. It's to say, you know, I mean, what is the disparity? It's like 16-8 overall. The Sharks have gotten twice as many, you know, and they get 5-on-3s, and they get repeated calls, you know, where here's a penalty against the Wings, and then 3 minutes later there's a penalty against the Wings, and it just kills your frickin' momentum. It keeps players on the bench. The disparity in ice time it was scary yesterday night from a couple guys, you know, Lidstrom playing 28 and Datsyuk and Zetterberg playing somewhere around 20 to your second and third liners in some cases playing 12 minutes. You know, if the Red Wings want to do things like try and work on plain old winning a faceoff and reestablishing their transition game, you know, getting the puck possession game going, improving their power play, which certainly deserves criticism in its own right for being schizophrenic. You can't do any of that when it seems like the officials. I don't want to go any further because it's
a bad thing. George, we were going. I think we were going for a record there on time. Petrella and I are sitting here just like watching the clock, just having some fun with it. But I'm glad that you did this because, like you said, George, you've taken a lot of heat today, and you know it's good to kind of step.
And that's fine.
Right.
I'm just doing that as a fan, who I believe is entitled to his opinion and is entitled to say, you know what, a lot of Red Wings fans were pissed off last night. And we have a point for once.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally. Totally. Petrella, I know you were
yeah.
itching to tell me something here, so go for it.
Real quick, yeah. I mean, I know I've said it. I think I've actually said it here on the Obstructive View before, but at least on the production line. Like, and maybe it's being a former athlete or like the son of a former athlete. And granted, neither one of us were super pros like these guys, but you can't let an outside factor like refereeing affect your game. You have to win a game beyond a doubt. Like if you allow yourself to be in the position where the outcome can be affected by something not within your power, for example, piss poor officiating, then you didn't play well enough. Because if you left it without a doubt that you were going to win this game no matter who's going to come out of the stands and screw you, we wouldn't have been in this position. Likewise, it'd be great if we could go more than 90 seconds between two Sharks goals. Like, you know, I hate to throw Howard under the bus, but I mean, both games we had kind of like a mini flurry where it's like, oh shit, things looked all right, now they don't. And it'd be great if we got 5 minutes in between goal one and goal two from San Jose, maybe things would have turned out a little different. And the same could be said about that 3-goal minute and a half flurry of game one. But all is not lost because as far as I can tell, we've given Nabokov all he can handle and we haven't given him all that much.
Right.
So
Wings have
fired in
both games. They fired as many shots either wide or into Sharks players as they have at Nabokov, if not more.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, one more neatly placed shot, and they don't even have to be that neat. He's not really standing on his head. I mean, he's playing well. I mean, he's playing as well as he has to, but it isn't really that. He's no Brizgalov, and I don't think there's anyone out there who believes that we're not just one extra shot tip, you know, call one way or the other, and it's a 2-0 wing series, you know. And I'm going to agree with George. I'm not saying that the Sharks haven't deserved to win both games, because of course they have. They've played very well, and the Wings have not played very well. But either one of those games could have went the other way, and no one really would have been like, whoa, the wrong team won. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Well, that's what's not concerning then. I mean, it's only like one goal. They only won by one goal. And so if the Wings can pull together, if they can prove even just that much, then, you know, the series could easily turn around.
And here's... Totally. Go ahead, George.
And I think that, just the one more point is that it's obvious, you know, that maybe I failed here in trying to separate this out, that just because you are complaining about the officiating doesn't mean that you're saying that that was the only reason the Wings lost.
Totally. Right. No. I know. I didn't mean to belittle it that way. I'm just saying, like,
no. And yeah, I don't think you were. I was trying to talk about the general perception. Word. You know, this. You know, I think that as fans, we have a right. I don't know. Maybe we don't have a right, but as fans, we are going to complain about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's especially I have to try to calm down. When a travesty like that takes place to any team, you know, where they're just looking, and then of course worse, your team rewards your opponent, you know. Whether it's your goaltending, whether it's your penalty killing, whether it's your face-offs, your competition level, whatever you want to call it, fans are going to say it, but that doesn't separate it. That doesn't mean that we're not saying, dude, pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. And that's where, you know, George, you touched on it earlier, too. And then the Wings have done a nice job taking the high road here. A lot of Mike Babcock's comments following the loss said, we got to stay out of the box. He didn't point fingers, you know, I'm sure he wanted to, but he didn't, and they took the high road, and the Wings need to step up. The championship, if the Wings were a championship team, they need to step up and address what they can address, and that is their play. That is what we talked about. That is the face-offs. That is, you know, being more physical, doing the right things, playing smart, all of the things that we've talked about. And one of the things that we talked about before the show that they obviously need to do is contain Joe Pavelski, who has been absolutely lights out in this series. This guy is red hot right now. He had an amazing series against the Avalanche in the first round. Put the team on his back, carried them, and pretty much got them that first round win. And then obviously coming into this series, he's got 4 goals in 2 games. He's just lights out. He's been a Wings killer, man. And you know, I don't know. Jess, you look at a guy like Pavelski, and he's kind of come out of nowhere, it seems like. Obviously, we heard about him during the Olympics, that, you know, people talked about him, but he wasn't like a Zach Parise in the Olympics, where, you know, Parise got a lot of the coverage, but he got a lot of the fanfare, and Pavelski was just kind of, it seemed like, a role player. And now, all of a sudden, you know, Pavelski is, you know, he's up there. He's elite. He's leading the playoffs in scoring right now. A lot of people, you know, I mean, if the Sharks were to go all the way and he was to maintain this clip, he's a shoo-in for the Conn Smythe. But what do you have to do to stop this guy?
God, I don't even know. He's like Franzen in the Avalanche series. That's what I feel like right now. He's just coming to his own. His game's just clicking. And that's kind of what we had come to expect from Franzen in the playoffs. Not that we've seen it this year. But, yeah.
Twist that knife in a little bit.
Well, yeah, that one hurt. I don't even know. If they can even just get him down to 1 goal or 0 goals for 1 game, I mean, it would just be a huge, huge difference for the Red Wings. What they can do to stop him, I don't know, because he's hotter than hot is what they're saying right now. And when stuff's just going in for you, everything he touches, it seems to go in.
Well, it's not even the shots. I mean, it's just the face-offs, 13 of 16.
Exactly.
The guy is, he's playing the best hockey's are, he's a superstar in these playoffs at least, and you know, we'll see what happens. But Petrella, we look at Pavelski, you know, in years gone by, the easy move would have been to say, you know, Hank Zetterberg, go get him, you know, blanket him, put the defense on. Are we in a situation where we, as we come home and we get the last change now, do we, are you expecting to see Babbles go that route, or is it going to take something else to slow this guy down?
No, I absolutely think he's going to go that route. And actually, before we get into it, I think it was Ellen at Big Red Machine, but I don't remember, so I'm sorry if I get that wrong. But somebody said before the series began that the Sharks forward that scares them the most is Joe Pavelski. And that's saying a lot for a team that has, you know, Joe Thornton, who I don't think is as fantastic as everyone else seems to think, and Patrick Marleau and Danny Heatley.
Think that he's great as everyone else thinks, but that's just me. Sorry.
Well, yeah, so I agreed to an extent. I mean, he's certainly scary. There's a handful of guys on that team that I like as players, you know, if I were impartial, which I am not. But if I were just watching as a hockey fan, there are some guys on that squad that are really good, and Joe Pavelski's one of them. And yeah, he did have a mini coming out party for the Olympics, and I think that he's riding a wave right now of like uber confidence, and he's kind of found something that he's really good at. And if that just means, like Jess said, that it's a Franzen-like dissecting of the Colorado Avalanche, you know, if that's just the kind of mojo he has against the Wings, then that's what he's got. So I think that the Wings have done it in the past. They're definitely going to use that last change to their advantage for once, I would hope. And, you know, maybe they do go for a matchup. I know that's not the ideal way to play hockey, is you kind of have to like roll with the punches and play as they come. But you do get that opportunity at home to make those changes to be, you know, as positive a change for your club as possible. And I do think that Babcock and company are going to find a way to, I don't know if they're going to shut him down completely immediately. Like, it might take a little while to kind of get into a groove defensively to defend against the guy as dynamic as he's become in these couple of games. But they're definitely going to do something, let him run wild. Not that they've, you know, done that on purpose, but he's certainly finding gaps. He's certainly, I mean, that play he made, the pass that he made last night, that was a nasty, nasty pass. And, you know, I'm not so certain that having a Selke winner out there would have prevented the play altogether. It certainly would have made a difference a tiny little bit, maybe, you know, at some point, transitionally, whatever it may have been. But, you know, he's going to make those big plays. It's just a matter of keeping them kind of like lower. You know, having 11 shots or whatever he had yesterday, that ain't going to fly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was 11.
11 shots. Crazy. Yes. Yeah, I agree. George, I kick it to you. What do you do to slow down Pavelski? We've thrown around some options here. We've talked through it a little bit, but are we missing something to slow this guy down, or what do you got?
I don't know. I think that the it's the usual cliches, tired and true. Take away his time and space. Shadow him. Watch his stick. Watch his dang stick. He is, you know, you got to give him credit for getting open, but you also have to, you know, ask the Red Wings forwards where exactly they've been when he's just darting through them, you know, and why they aren't getting body position on him, why he's sneaking to the inside, and why they aren't skating harder to ensure that he has to skate around them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that detail stuff. It's trying to tie up his, it's trying to whack at his stick blade when he gets the puck, you know, not do anything that would incur a penalty or even, you know, how do I want to put it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Would entice the referee. But at, you know, you gotta take away his stick. You gotta shadow him to some extent. You gotta know where he is. You gotta know he's freaking hot, and treat him like he is Sidney Crosby, or treat him like he's whoever. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to respect him a lot more, as I think is the biggest answer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know,
they can't just keep trying to play him like he is anything less than it. And it doesn't matter whether he is having his Johan Franzen breakout or whether he's having his, as the old timers know, the old John Drews you know, season where John Drews played fantastic for the Washington Capitals, and I think it was the 91 playoffs, and was kind of never seen again. Whatever. He's a superstar right now. Treat him like one. Check him like one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to, and you know, it's obvious he's not cooling down. I thought maybe it would stop after the first series against Colorado. It's not. He's red hot, and he needs to be shut down. But, you know.
Hey, did you hear that he's the first player to score two goals in three games since Mario Lemieux? Because I only mentioned it 48 times last night.
There it is. Yes. Oh, God. Unbelievable. Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting bit of trivia we should tell you every 15 minutes. Yeah,
I know, right? Definitely. But, God. Anyways, before we move off here, I promise we're gonna move on to happier things. We've talked about this series, but I know that George, one of the things you also wanted to touch on real quick was Mike Babcock's comment after game one about Devin Setoguchi, who had that little series there where he clips Franzen with his stick and Franzen's bleeding, and then Setoguchi goes down, and then on the power play he's cutting through the middle and Hudler takes a whack, or not Hudler, Jesus, we're gonna talk about him in a minute. Filppula.
Hi-o.
I'm spoiling the show, but Filppula takes a whack at him, and you know, and Setoguchi goes down like he got, you know, his knee blown out by a 12 gauge. Yeah, but, and Babs obviously says, you know, you're from Western Canada, don't do that crap. And you had a nice little anecdote for us there. What do you make of Babs' comments there, George?
Okay, I have to confess that I used to have some extended family in Manitoba. I would spend some summers up there in the mid-90s, to the point that I've spent 6 months of my life there. I nearly married a girl from Winnipeg. Western Canada is a very different place for those of you who are only familiar with Canada from Ontario. They're a little more easygoing. They're a little more independent. And to say that is an extraordinarily nasty insult. That's worse than saying you're from Detroit or you're from Michigan. That's like, I mean, essentially, because Western Canada, you know, big cities aside, is so sparsely populated. Like, you look at Winnipeg, and Winnipeg is the biggest city in Manitoba, and the metro area has 700,000 people in it. And most of these, you know, these are little teeny tiny towns, so people are very independent, very proud of where they are from. To say you're from a small town in Western Canada, don't do that crap. That is just vicious. And it was intended to be so, and I was really, and I have to say, you know what, Setoguchi didn't dive as much in game two.
Yes.
It worked.
You got the,
because Babs called him out. That was mean and nasty, and it was deserved.
Babs gave him the verbal death stare.
That's like calling, I don't know, it's like making fun of your mom.
Oh!
Or something, or a family member. You know, you're in Western Canada, it's a family.
Yeah.
And if you're saying, you know, don't embarrass the family, that's essentially what he said.
For sure. We just wanted to get that take in because we had touched on it before. It was an interesting comment and some, you know, it was, it got played up a little bit and we'll see how it goes. The gamesmanship is definitely on with Babcock and even McClellan and they're kind of rolling, but let's move off of the San Jose story for a little bit here and we'll go to some of the other happenings around the Red Wings Nation here. Obviously, we've heard this week that you know, a couple of the big news things, Ken Holland and Jim Nill are going to be extended after the end of the season from all reports. So we've heard that. Some other chatter around the Steve Yzerman potentially making a move to Tampa Bay to become the GM there. Whether or not you buy into that, that's a whole different story, but that was in the news. I think one of the bigger things though that we've seen too over the last week and a half is that with the collapse of Moscow Dynamo of the KHL, Yuri Hudler has been released from his contract. He is done in Europe and will be back on the Red Wings bench next year per his agreement and arbitration during this offseason and will be back in the Red Wings uniform. So Jess, I pose it to you. What, you know, going with the Hoodler story here. How excited are you to have Happy Hoodler back in the lineup next year?
Well, I mean, it's twofold, and I'll probably be the only person out there who says this, but I was kind of pissed off with the way that he handled the whole situation, and I'm still probably a little annoyed and slightly bittered with going to arbitration like that. It kind of tied Holland's hands for much longer than it needed to be, and the whole free agent market was a lot more picked over, and everyone's saying, oh, well, you know, he went for the money, and yeah, I can't really blame him for wanting more money, but I'll say it, I'm kind of pissed off with the way things went down, and not necessarily jumping up and down at his salary. I still think it's a little bit overpay for Hoodler, but, I mean, again, the Wings needed more scoring this season, and he'll be able to bring that, and we'll have to clear some cap space, and that brings up the whole thing. Will Malpe be back? Williams will be gone, which makes me happy, but I certainly hope it doesn't affect the signing of, you know, Helm or anyone like that, who I think they're going to be restricted free agents, so I hope it doesn't affect anything like that, because, you know, now he's decided that since maybe it didn't work out as well as he wanted in Russia and that team went up, that he'd like to come back now.
He's
No. No. From his agents on out, his agents are still pulling the BS line. If I can pretty much guarantee you that if Dynamo had not folded, and Dynamo hadn't folded to the extent that they just they literally cut up their contracts with Hoodler, and I don't know if you remember the guy Carl Ratunek, he used to play for the Senators, and another guy or two. I'm pretty sure that A, the KHL wouldn't have let him leave. They would have made him play for another team and fulfill that contract. Because, you know, I mean, the month-long feud that tied up the Wings' salary cap hands was between the NHL and the IIHF and the International Ice Hockey Federation and the Russians, you know. And it was whether you can poach a restricted free agent if he's going to arbitration. If he's going to arbitration, does that mean that he is in fact not a free agent? And the IIHF obviously sided with the Russians and said, well, if he's going to arbitration, which is, then he's a free agent. And that was why Svoboda made the Red Wings go to arbitration, even though they essentially agreed to the deal. They said, Svoboda made, you know, that they agreed to the deal, and then they said to the arbitrator, you know, we want you to award us this contract. Mm-hmm. And he did that very specifically so Hoodler would go to Russia, based on the KHL's viewing of the situation. And anyway, if Dynamo hadn't folded, he would be playing in Russia. If Dynamo had not sucked in the playoffs, they might not have folded, and I think his agents really would have wanted him to fulfill that contract and would have wanted themselves to get that payday. I don't buy any of this. I mean, I'm sure he missed the Red Wings, and I'm sure that, you know, playing in Russia is a very, very, it's very different. It's certainly the Wild West out there. But I don't buy any of that crap. That was a pack of lies.
Yeah, or that line where what did his agent say? The Wings GM just wants to make Happy happy or Hoodler happy, and they just want him back and want him happy.
And the Red Wings missed him in the locker room.
Petrella, you want to tee one up here?
I'm not thrilled with the way, you know, the money thing and the contract stuff was handled last summer, and it was certainly entertaining, but it would have been more entertaining if I wasn't a Wings fan. But about the player, the one who's coming back and rejoining the Red Wings, I am excited. I liked Hoodler. I always did. I'm not sure if he's the – well, I'm pretty sure he's not the answer. Like, he's not going to be the one that would have put us over the top in this Shark series already or whatever it may be. Like, he's not going to be a difference maker to the point of, whoa, now we don't have to shop for missing components this summer. But I do like him. I think he adds a spark. He's a tiny guy, but he really does get to the right spots. He maybe not the best skater there ever has been, but you know, he's a smart hockey player given the style he plays, which sounds weird because he's not a particularly headstrong kid, but you know, I do like him, and I think he will make a difference. I think having those 25 goals or whatever he may have had this year would have helped a great deal, particularly in the November, December months when we were relying on guys like Todd Bertuzzi to score goals. So, you know, I think there's something to be said about his, yeah, you know, I had to get
I knew it was coming.
I mean, but look, I mean, honestly, though, I mean, we were relying on guys that we really shouldn't have relied on as much as we did. Yeah, we expected Todd Bertuzzi to score some goals, but we didn't expect.
Well, at one point, the Red Wings' second line was Filppula, Miller, and Rotola. You know.
Right.
You
yeah.
know.
Good point.
And,
yeah,
and that's where I would say that in terms of, well, was it positive that he left? We wouldn't have had Drew Miller. We wouldn't have had Bertuzzi, and they probably wouldn't have gone after Eaves.
It's an interesting point. Yeah.
But in any case, I think that then we got to move. I mean, this is just very briefly. When you look at the Red Wings salary cap structure, and when you look going forward, they have to, you know, you add Hudler, who we think is overpaid, but in terms of free agent, you know, if what he could get in the open market is essentially a pretty decent bargain at 2.875
yep.
or so.
8.75.
You know, then you look at the Wings and who they have to re-sign, and you look at the decisions they have to make. Lidstrom's unrestricted. You know, obviously the Wings want to bring him back if they can. And if he wants to, and he's going to want to, he's going to have to take a haircut. Holmstrom's coming back. Bertuzzi, as much as some people despise him, are annoyed by him, enervated, he was useful. He's coming back. Jason Williams, he's gone. Andreas Lilja, do the Red Wings want to keep him because Jonathan Erickson plays 1,000% better when he's paired with him, or do the Red Wings want to deal with Meech or Kindle, or do they want to try and upgrade? Because as we've said, you know, Kindle comes up one-way contract. Does he come up and get regular playing time, or is he the seventh defenseman? Lebda, you know, is he going to be too expensive? And then on defense, the other one that rounds out is Meech. They can re-sign Meech, or they can trade his rights, or they can just not give him a qualifying offer. Pardon me. Then up front, May is unrestricted. He's gone. Ablicator's restricted. Helm is restricted. Miller's restricted. Eaves is restricted. And then you have the sticky wicket that is Rotola, who has to clear waivers next year, and he's restricted. You know, the Wings have to make some decisions both up front and on defense. Abdelkader and Kindle are definitely going to be up here on a full-time basis, as both of them have to clear waivers. Rotola may or may not make the team. They may or may not decide to send him down. Hudler comes in, and if you look at Hudler coming in, and you look at the 12 men that they're dressing for the playoffs right now, you know, up front you've got Zetterberg, Filppula, Bertuzzi, you've got Holmstrom, Franzen, and then Datsyuk, Eaves.
Eaves, Draper, Helm, yep.
And then Miller and Abdelkader and somebody I'm forgetting.
Dan Cleary.
Dan Cleary. Those are 12
forwards. How dare you?
You're right, because Cleary is a hell of a player. But those are 12. Those are 12 forwards. You add in, Abdelkader and Hudler. That's 14. Looking on defense, you've got Lidstrom, Rafalski, Cronwall, Stewart, Erickson, Kindle, maybe Meech, probably Lilja. You know, for the people that think that the Red Wings are going to make a whole bunch of big changes this summer, especially if they lose to the Sharks, the answer is no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Unless the Wings really decide that there's somebody out there that they feel can significantly improve their defense, or that they feel that they can part with somebody up front. So,
sure.
Just wanted to nail that down. Because people ask me that all the time in the game calls, and I think that if by the next show there's been a handshake line, it needs to be addressed.
Fair enough. George has laid it out. We can see that there's going to be some moves. Obviously, Kirk Maltby, we got to figure out what's going to happen with him.
Oh, and then Maltby. The question is, with Maltby, is the obvious is going to be for his loyalty. Will they re-sign him and then send him to Grand Rapids? I think that's the only way that he would come back is in a Darren McCarty role.
That would be interesting. I say just send him right to the front office, but that's just me. But make him a scout, do something, give him the desk job. But
as for Yzerman and Tampa Bay, the questions are Does he want to leave, you know, Tampa Bay is a bit of a haul. Does he want to leave his high school aged daughters and his family here? Does he want to leave the Red Wings? Does he want to leave the Red Wings family? Do they have some sort of plan for him in their ownership group, given that the ownership is kind of shifting from Mike and Marion Ilitch to Chris Ilitch and Tom Wilson and all the people that they're bringing in from Palace Sports and Entertainment? And then there's the fact that the Orrin Kulas and Len Barry, you know, drove the Lightning franchise into the ground. Is that exactly the perfect opportunity?
Right. So. Lots of questions, lots of drama all over the all over Red Wings Nation right now. But it'll be interesting, and it's all going on while we get the playoffs happening. But you know, the other thing that we've touched on too, as we sat before the show and we talked a little bit, was a couple of the prospects. The Wings made some moves with some prospects this week, signing Mitchell Callahan, much to Michael Petrella's chagrin, who was born in 1991. Right, Petrella? How old were you then, dude?
Nine, in fourth grade.
I was 13, if it makes you feel any better.
There you go.
A little bit. It does, a little bit.
I was seven, I guess, something like that. So you've got Callahan, who signs, you know,
Callahan, Smith, and Brendan.
Now, Brendan Smith. Now, here's a guy I'm excited about. Obviously, one of the premier defensemen, played for Wisconsin this year. I think he's gonna be up with the big club pretty darn quickly. It's just a matter of how long Lidstrom stays around before I think we get Brendan Smith up to the big club. But, I'm excited about him. I don't know about you guys, but
there's a maturity level there. I want to see how he's going to react to the professional hockey. I think that Mike Eaves and the University of Wisconsin coaching staff deserve a hell of a lot of credit, because having, you know, no offense to Mr. Smith if he's listening, but having met him at prospect camps, he was such a hot dog the first year he came in. Mm-hmm. And he got into some probation issues for, like, driving a moped while he was intoxicated and some other stuff that he got suspended for, you know, the previous year at the University of Wisconsin. Being a college kid who was being a college athlete who was a really elite on the ice, but being a young man off the ice. And the Wisconsin coaches, they made it a project because they could see how fantastic his skills were, to sort of have him get his head on straight. And he's done that. But I want to see how he's going to respond to professional hockey, because that grind, you know, you hear people like Howard and Erickson, mostly players like Howard and the guys who come out of college, saying you can't believe the grind. And you can't believe the on-ice chaos, that to some extent it's easier to play in the NHL than it is to play, you know, three games in four nights.
Sure.
Three games and three nights in three different cities, and have to ride on the bus and you know, because we saw somebody like Hattrick Dick, who is tremendously talented,
because
he couldn't deal with it, you know.
He couldn't.
So,
and you know,
and I think Smith will be fine, but I think he's in for a year or two of some learning experiences. But I think he's going to be like Howard. He's going to be somebody where the Wings really see his talent, and they're gonna mentor him real well, and he is gonna develop fantastically.
I'm excited about him. I am definitely.
And then there's also Callahan. I guess the Callahan thing, real quick, you can say, you know, if the Wings are going after this little runt who's 5'11", 175 pounds, they certainly, and putting him on their 50-man roster, they got to see something real special in him. And then they also signed Joachim Andersen, which was a good call, probably because of the transfer agreement that the IIHF or that the NHL in Sweden signed, but also because, you know, they want to see what he can do in terms of being a good checking forward. So, and if you're a Griffins fan, you can also look at Brian Lassoff is going to come in, Brent Radicke, and Willie Coetzee from Red Deer.
Yep.
And I think there might be another guy coming in. So the Griffins are going to improve and are going to get younger, and there are some very promising Red Wings prospects that are in the mix there.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun to watch. You got the talent coming up. It's, you know, we'll see. The transition will continue over the next year or two, as we see some guys move out, as we see some of these guys come in. But the pipeline is rich. It is good looking, and I'm excited. You know, I still wish Hattrick Dick was around. He's in my heart.
We'll see. He's been invited to come back, and he wants to come to training camp and either make the team out of that or go back to Sweden. He said that, I think, about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, we'll see, because the Red Wings obviously want him. They, you know, if he doesn't make the team out of camp, which he won't, they want him to go to Grand Rapids. I think he will be
which
in
he won't.
Camp. I think he will be in camp, but then who knows? He'll probably pull a Rhino and go back, because Johan Rhino went back. And Rhino, for the record, AIK Stockholm was they won in their playoff run. They were promoted to the Swedish Elitserien. And then what did AIK do? They promptly got rid of Rhino and said we got better
yep,
players.
Yep, sure did. They cut him loose, so he is definitely. It'll be interesting. I'm excited. I'm fingers crossed for Dick Axelsson. I may just go make myself a jersey anyways for him. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But as we move along, it's we've looked at it. There's we've talked about this series, we've talked about the prospects, we've talked all about this. Let's have a little fun. Let's let it go here for a minute. And for those of you that are on Twitter and follow along, you can, if you don't follow Bingo Bango Jess here, she and Mike Servin, who were part of the H2H crew over the, when the Wings were in Phoenix, actually went out and, now Mike went to the practices, right, Jess? I don't think you got to any.
No, Mike went to the practices, and there's a lot of Twitter talk about stalking. So let me clarify myself here. I'm driving down the road to meet my friends at Happy Hour, where we often go to Happy
Hour. What is the name of this place?
It's at the JW Marriott. It's the outside seating area. Okay. And so we're driving down the road to go to Happy Hour, and what I thought was some jackass running out in front of my car was, in fact, Mike Babcock on a jog. So I nearly hit Mike Babcock while I'm driving into the JW Marriott. So I'm thinking, holy shit, I just hit Mike Babcock. I can't believe it's him. Well, we keep driving and going in, obviously knowing that they're probably staying there. Uh-huh. When we get in there, Kirk Maltby was sitting at the bar. So I apparently freeze, and obviously I'm not going to say anything. So I go and kind of just sit there, and we were watching the Pittsburgh game and called Mike Servin over. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. We did get to meet, like, Lidstrom and Homer and Helm, and everyone was really nice. So
I saw my favorite picture, the one dedicated to you, Mr. Michael Petrella, was Mike Servin with Todd Bertuzzi himself there. That was a Bertuzzi with the Stone Cold Killer look, man. Yeah.
Oh god, he's frightening in person. All
he looked like
up.
He really. Yeah, he didn't look very friendly. He did have that look. Kind of like Servin was like, "Yay, my arms around Todd Bertuzzi," and Todd Bertuzzi almost had that "you need to get a little bit away from me" kind of glare going on.
Yeah,
I don't know if Todd Bertuzzi cannot be creepy.
No, that's how he looked the whole time. I don't think he had any other expression. That was pretty much it. The beard, the tattoos, it was intense.
Now, here's a question I have been dying to know. We've seen the pictures of Jimma here, who, and, you know, I'm not, like, the skinniest guy in the world. You know, I could probably afford to lose a couple pounds, but, man, it looks like he's got a little rotund there in the front. What's going on? Is it true, or what's the deal with Jimmy?
Jimmy's got some nice man boobies going on, and he's rocking a Todd Bertuzzi faux hawk, so I don't really know what was going on with Jimmy.
Oh,
definitely not what I was expecting. Yeah, he had the faux hawk, the unbuttoned button-up shirt with the chest hair and the necklaces. It was frightening.
Now, George, you might know this. Is Jimmy Howard married? I swear to God, I saw a wedding ring on his finger there.
He got married last summer to a girl he met from the university.
There you go.
And he has struggled with weight issues since his college years. He was 230 back when he came out of
wow.
You know, so it's not surprising that he's got a little bit of chubby on him. Don't take it. Don't from us heavier pear shaped guys. Don't hold it against
us. There is no holding it against. I it was just
nothing wrong with the little A cup here and there.
I love it. I love it. No, it's good on Jimmy. You know, whatever. If he's comfortable with what he's got going on and he's stopping pucks, I don't care if he's 350, man. As long as the puck stays out of the net, The guy's he's had a heck of a
padding is padding. Padding is
that's
padding.
Right. That's right. Whether you put it on, whether it's shoulder pads or a cheeseburger, whatever it is, you're all set. But you know,
cue up the Goldberg special effect.
I love it, man. But yeah, Jess, that's awesome. No, I mean, everybody was sitting there watching Servin post the Twitter pictures. They were flooding in, and I saw you got one with Helm and a nice comment from Darren Helm asking how Herm was doing,
Yeah.
Go ahead. How did that go down?
Well, yeah, we were just talking and, I think Servin actually mentioned something about H2H and he said, oh yeah, Herm, nice guy. How's he doing? So, you know, they were all just really nice guys. We weren't bothering them. We walked up and took a picture, you know, just real quick. And so maybe that made it a little bit better, but everyone was really nice, really friendly. So it was pretty cool.
And now who was all there? I know we had Bertuzzi, Jimmy Howard was there. I saw Lidstrom was up in there, Holmstrom.
Yeah, Osgood was there, and Draper, Cleary, Drew Miller.
Oh, Salt and Pepper was there, huh?
Yes, he was there.
Is he really as gray in person, by the way? I need to know.
More so, yes.
Wow. It's supposed to look Silver Fox. What can you say?
Yeah, I think that was pretty much it.
Nice.
So,
none of you are over 30, seriously. One of my friends is going gray, and it's just not a big deal.
Well, Miller and I are like...
You don't worry. I mean, because I'm bald, you know?
But George, you make up with it with the goatee of awesomeness. Thing.
Yeah, I know. I've got the cactus growing.
Yeah.
On, you know, it's pretty crazy. The burning bush or whatever. But anyway.
Miller's like my, how old is he? He's gotta be around my age.
I think he's like 26
yeah,
or something.
That's how old I am. I'm 26. I'm checking the mirror though for the gray hair too.
26.
Maybe the girls like it. I don't know. Jess, is it a thing? Like if we got a little gray going on, is it, yeah, no? I mean.
Should we put him in a Just for Men commercial?
There you go. Touch of gray.
Yeah. A touch of gray.
I'm sure it's a personal decision. I'm not touching that one.
Oh, you just want to touch Drew Miller. That's okay. We'll just leave it at that.
I mean, I like those those Just for Men and Touch of Grey commercials are great. They're the most blatantly sexist, you know, put this stuff in your hair and you're gonna get a girl.
Be careful. I mean, they make commercials like that.
They make beer commercials look subtle. Anyway, so No, those of us, frankly, in Detroit, given the level of access that there is to the Red Wings around here, we're insanely jealous of you guys.
Yeah.
Because we don't get up and personal with them. We can't get up and personal like with the Wings like that around here. And that is a discussion for a different day, mind
totally.
You.
Totally.
But you guys had a blast, and we were thrilled for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Absolutely thrilled. And it was, you know, and it was cool to see that, you know, they the guys were out there kicking the soccer ball around in the parking lot, coming over, signing stuff. It was really good to see that the Wings come over and acknowledge the fans that came out. And well done by the Red Wings contingent in Phoenix. I think there was Octopi on the ice at every game. You can't argue with that. We only saw one snake out there. And, hey, it was
Servin scooped everybody about whether Eves could play, and I believe it was in game six.
Yes,
so,
Servin scooped everyone on that. I mean, everyone. That was awesome. That was totally.
He is an honorary digger.
And you know what else he scooped? The other thing he scooped, too, was not only the Eves one, but he scooped Jason Williams going to the bench in game two. And the Free Press did go with something right at the same time, but Servin tweeted me about 6 minutes before it went and said, Williams is still on the ice and Abdelkader's off. And me being the idiot, I was sitting here actually doing something else and didn't even happen to look at it. And Servin delivered me a scoop in my DMs on my Twitter account, and I booted it just right out of the, you know, whatever. But Mike Servin, honorary deep digger, good for you, my man, and good for you guys that you guys got such a cool experience out there in Phoenix. And hey, thank God you guys got out of there with that series win. Otherwise, I don't know if I'd ever want to hang out with you guys again. It might be your fault. Lots of cool stuff going around around Red Wings Nation right now too. As we get ready for Game 3 and back in Detroit, good to finally be home for some home cooking for the Red Wings. Obviously, you know, we've talked at H2H. We did the tinfoil hats. That was a big hit. And following that wonderful officiating that we've talked about throughout the entire show here. Sounds like a little something's going to be happening at the game, game three. Petrella, I know you flagged it for everybody today, and Puck Daddy picked it up and tossed it around, but sounds like we're going to have a little bit of a flash mob going at the at game three here. What's up with that, bud?
I hope so. Yeah, Sarah, our good friend from the Twitterverse and from H2H, I don't know if she started it, but I caught wind of it when she mentioned something on her live journal, and, you know, it kind of has been growing a little bit. So I thought, what the hell? Let's see if we can make something happen here. And I threw it on Winging It Motown as well as the production line, hoping that a couple more people would join her for what I hope would be an absolute mob scene of people wearing tinfoil hats, because if nothing else, that's a cool picture.
That would be an incredible picture. Now, it's happening, like we said, at Joe Louis Arena tomorrow. But even if you're not going to the game, right, you can still get in on it.
That's the way she made it sound. Is even if you're not a ticketed guest, it looks like a handful or a bunch are going to go check out the game, watch it from a bar downtown. The Gordie Howe entrance. They're looking to have everyone descend
6:45 p.m.
6:45, yes, sir. And hopes
it
that
is on, it is on the snapshots as well.
Okay,
so.
Good.
You've made it now. Now it's made it. If George is, it's been on Puck Daddy. It's been on production line here. George has got it. Sean Leahy commented. Everybody is talking about this flash mob. I can't wait to see what happens with it. It's gonna.
I hope it happens. I hope it's not like a sad trombone moment. I mean, regardless of how much press it's gotten in the last few hours, I want it to work because that's a pretty damn cool idea.
It is. It is.
I wish I could be there. Like, I literally would, if I were at home visiting, I would go without a ticket just to go be a part of that. And obviously we, you know, see some folks that we won't get to see very often again. But, you know, that's a very cool opportunity to kind of make a scene that's peaceful and hilarious, to be honest.
And I personally enjoyed the video that you posted from the Grand Central Station one, where everybody froze in place for 5 minutes in Grand Central Station, like over 200 people froze in place. That was incredible. I could not.
Well, you know, this week after what happened in Times Square on Saturday, they would have evacuated the damn building if they did that today.
This
so.
Is true. This is very true.
Yeah. It's a very strange town I live in.
It is. You know, that NYC, it's hot right now, it's whatever, but it's a crazy town. Speaking of, you said, of people going back to Detroit, if you had the opportunity to go back to Detroit, I'm going to take just a minute here. We all know I like to talk about myself a little bit on this show, but I do want to mention something that I know that, Petrella, you covered it on the blog. We've seen it actually on a few things right now, is that Gatorade and Fox Sports Net are teaming up for this series called Replay the Series, which is it's taking rivalry games that have happened in the past and then have some sort of a history, and it's replaying them with those participants, but it's replaying them and today. And they are doing – the Season 2 kicks off this coming Sunday, actually, I believe, with a game that's right here in Detroit. It's actually going to be taking place at CompuWare Arena. It is Michael Petrella's alma mater, the Detroit Catholic Central Shamrocks, are going to be taking on Trenton High from a game that happened in '99. And Petrella, I not to put you back on the spot, but you know, you went to CC, you know some of these guys. Like, can you what was going on with that game?
I was a junior that year. I was not involved with the hockey program at CC. I played for a different program, but it was terrifying. I mean, I remember hearing that night because I was friends with a bunch of those guys, and I actually heard that same night that at first we thought it was a guy, one of our guys that got slashed. An errant skate caught a Trenton player in the jugular, and it was pretty bad. The way I understood it is he sort of made it back to the bench a la Richard Zednik,
mm-hmm.
Before collapsing, and I guess there was a doctor in the stands who kind of saw what was going on, kind of like Dr. Colucci did when Fisher collapsed, and he kind of hopped the glass himself and was like, you guys got to get out of the way and let me save this kid's life, which is exactly what he did. And, fortunately, because I didn't know any of the guys from that team, but that I can't even imagine losing a friend or a teammate, 15, 16, 17, however old Kurt Letarte was mm-hmm. at the time. But, you know, these are all the guys playing for CC. I know all of them personally. I mean, granted, it's been 11 years or 10 years since I spoke to any of them. But seeing the video, like the trailer of the series, it's a very, very cool thing. And I'm reluctant to say too much positive about my school. I was not a big fan. Anyone who wants to hear about it, I'll tell you all kinds of stories about why I don't like it there. But they are doing the right thing. This is a wonderful opportunity, and those kids deserve to play that game, man. I mean, it was a 4-4 tie. I think there was like 3.5 minutes left or something like that in the third period. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a state championship, but it was a huge game, and who knows what could have happened if Trenton had won or if CC had won. But CC did end up winning the state championship. So I think it's a great, great, great thing, and these kids deserve a little bit of closure, even if it's just for ha-has and to get to kind of meet Scotty Bowman and Brendan Shanahan and to kind of reconnect a little bit. It's a very, very cool
thing. That's sad. And you touched on it right there. Obviously, there will be the guest coaches for this event. Bowman will be behind the CC bench. And Shanny will be manning the Trenton bench as well. And so I will actually, for everybody that's in the Metro Detroit area, I will be there. Gatorade has been super gracious and has asked me to come cover the game. They are taking care of me and bringing me into Detroit this weekend, so I will be there. Getting a chance to sit down and talk, not only talk to Scotty and Brendan, but to talk to the guys that are playing in the game, and you know, I'm curious to talk to these guys and hear what it means to them. You know, it's a great opportunity. It shows the, like Michael's saying, the power of second chances and getting some closure on a horrific situation, and it'll be fun. So if you're interested, you can go to replaytheseries.com. There are tickets on sale at CC, and Novi is selling them, and at Trenton High School as well. They're selling tickets. They're $10. It's at CompuWare Arena in my old stomping grounds of Plymouth, Michigan. I will be there. And I'm getting in Saturday, so if we get to game five, and we're going to touch on that in just a second, I will be out and about looking for somebody to watch the game with. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter, email, whatever. We can get together. George, I might even come find you at some point. I don't know what's going on, but we might maybe we'll go take a Zamboni ride together.
Three quick things.
What's that?
Though that would be cool. Three quick
Fire
things.
Away.
Fox Sports Detroit is actually going to have a live stream of the game. Mm-hmm. I believe that's Sunday.
Three p.m.
3 p.m. They're going to have, and they're going to air it. It's going to be on foxsportsdetroit.com and replaytheseries.com. And at 9 p.m., they're going to do a delayed telecast with Matt Shepard and John Van Beesbrook.
Nice.
So they are going to – so Fox Sports Detroit is all over this as well. And I know this is going to sound like a commercial, but it's okay because I drink Powerade, not Gatorade. Gatorade has been very cool in terms of helping these guys get into hockey shape, giving them hockey gear, and you know, really gearing up. So this isn't going to be a bunch of guys who haven't laced up their skates in 10 years playing. It's going to be a real competitive
game. They've been, and as George, as you're saying, they've actually been part of an 8-week program with Gatorade, and I believe it's Velocity Sports that they're working together to get them in game shape. It'll be interesting. I know, Petrella, you know that Brad Holland is playing in this game. Ken Holland's son, he'll be there playing for CC. And you know, I know a few of the guys from there too. I'm expecting to see some familiar faces. I'm a UAD guy, but I'm expecting to see some familiar faces from where I came
totally.
Up. And
you
go ahead.
You know what's very cool too is that, you know, these guys, even if they hadn't played in 10 or 11 years, obviously we all kind of lose a step, but. That team in 1999, I won't speak on Trenton because I don't know it too close, but I'm pretty sure that it's the same goes. But those kids that played for the Shamrocks, those were damn good hockey players. And I'm pretty certain that they could – yeah, I'm sure they're going to need some conditioning. But, I mean, I'm sure they didn't lose all that. Those kids, some of them were just unreal. And I'm looking forward to see what they got. I'm sure a lot of them still got their legs and – their hands and their brains, those things don't go away. So I'm pretty sure one of the guys, I won't get into specifics because I'm not sure if you'd want me to, but one of the kids from that team plays in the league now. He's in Calgary. I doubt very much that the Flames would allow him to play. And I haven't really talked to him. I should shoot him an email, but I doubt very highly that he'd be playing, but wouldn't that be something? I mean, this kid, he was just one of us, you know. I sat next to him for 4 years in homeroom, and now he's, you know, he's an NHLer. So it'd be really cool if he came back and got to finish that game that he was most definitely a part of. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it as a fan and as well as somebody who kind of sort of tangentially lived through it.
Totally. It's going to be a lot of fun. I will be, like I said, I'll be there. I'll be writing about it. I'm really looking forward to it. And it's a great thing that they're doing for these guys. So that's it. Put it on your weekend radar. If hopefully there'll be some Wings hockey still going on, but we'll see what happens. But speaking of that, guys, as we get to the – we've been going here for quite a good amount of time, but we got to end with the final word. And so this week we're going to set it up like this. It's we are now down – the Wings are down 2-0. Heading back to Joe Louis Arena for games 3 and 4. You lose one of those at home and you're in dire straits. You know, you win both of them, you're right back in this series. We talked about it, you know, 2 years ago, I think it was Nashville, got down 2-0 to the Wings, came back, tied that series 2-2, and we had a game. You want even closer, think back to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. Wings got up 2-0 on Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh came back, tied the series 2-2 at home, so it can be done. Obviously, this year, Montreal got down 3-1 and came all the way back to win. I don't think we want to get ourselves into that situation. But, Jess, I'm going to start with you for the final word on this one. What do you see happening, not only this week, but for this series? Is this something? Can the Wings still put it together, or what do you got happening right now?
Yeah, I'm still being cautiously optimistic. I still think we haven't seen a great Wings team out there, and they've only lost by one goal. So I think it's going to be the Wings in 7.
Wings.
I think they'll win the 2 at the Joe, and I still think it'll be the Wings in 7.
Wings in 7. I like the confidence. There's no hesitation there, none whatsoever.
Just, that doesn't happen.
I have no rounds. Man, that, we look to the stars. There's no stars involved in this one. The horoscopes are gone. We're going straight after it. Wings and George Malik, are you as confident in this, or what do you got for us?
I'm nervous, but that's normal. That would be even if the Wings weren't playing. But in general, I think, you know, grind it out, outwork them, out-detail them, out-compete them, out-desire them, and I think that I think that coming home will help. I think that having the last change and the first face-off drop will help, and I do think that, yes, the Red Wings will come back and win this series in 7 games, barring any more officiating fiascos. maybe despite of them.
I love it. I love it. I love the last knife twist there. Well played, sir. Well played. And then finally, Michael Petrella, I throw it over to you. I ask you before every game how your gut's feeling. And you know what? I take some blame here because I didn't ask you before the last two on how you were feeling. So I will be there in your group talk tomorrow asking you about what you think about this game. But for everybody else out there, what do you got for us?
You know me, I'm hesitant to make any sort of proclamation, but I can't explain the gut feeling. I don't know what it is, but sometimes I'm just not nervous, and other times it's just like an impending feeling of doom. And these last two games were just kind of like, I don't know what's going on here, but I don't know. We've touched on it earlier tonight. Like they're not far off. You know, it could be 2-0 Wings and no one would bat an eye in the way that the two teams have played one another. So, yes, the Sharks certainly deserve to be up 2-0, but it's not like it's been a blowout. And so I definitely think they're capable of regrouping. Having said that, Tuesday's Game 3 is massive because going down 0-3, as we all know, it's not exactly a nail in the coffin, but it's pretty damn close. So, you know, Game 3 is a must-win, like it or not. And, 7 is certainly possible. So I guess we'll just kind of take game by game. I hate to throw sports cliches at you, but we're going to have to at this point. You know, you can't look ahead too much. If you do, you're going to forget about the one that's coming up next. So hopefully, I'm hopeful, and I don't feel bad. Like, I don't feel like it's going to end here, and I do like how the Wings match up with the Sharks. So, hey, if they get their feet under them and don't play like jackasses, we may have 7 games, and we may have the Wings in the conference finals again.
That would be something. 4 years in a row, if they make it, knock on wood right here. I said before this thing started, Wings in 7. I'm sticking with it. You know, what's the worst that can happen? So, I mean, you know what? I'm not going to say that. Wings in 7, I just believe in them. I think that they can come home and get it done. I'm liking the two Tuesday, they get the Tuesday Thursday game, and then we're at every other day now. It's a good rhythm, and before they head back out west for a Saturday tilt on for game five. I'd like to see a game six because I will be in the Detroit area and maybe I'll swing in for the extra day and get that game. Who knows? It'd be nice to have, but, hey, it's do or die time right now. We've gone over it. Everybody knows what needs to be done. To stay up to date, though, on everything that's going on with the Red Wings, with all of the stuff that we talked about, obviously you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow the show on Twitter at Red Wings OV. That's the Twitter address, or twitter.com/Red Wings OV. Shoot us an email at theobstructedview@gmail.com. We've been getting some really great ones, and we actually got one that we're going to talk about once the season is over, hopefully in June at some point, about some conference realignment. Just to give you guys a little heads up, we got a pretty in-depth email from one of our listeners on that. So that's coming up in a few shows here. But, keep shooting us the mail. Keep following us, questions for us. Let us know what's on your mind. And we will definitely we will touch on it as we keep moving through the playoffs here. But I think we're going to call it a wrap after this one. Big games this week, and I'm not sure when we'll come back at you. Just keep following the Twitter account. We'll keep you posted on when we're going to throw out our next show. But for right now, I want to go ahead and thank George Malik from Snapshots for being here, Jess from Bingo Bango, and Michael Petrella from the production line. I am Chris Hollis from Motown Wings. I am signing off. Let's go Red Wings. Get it done this week.